Dave Hill here, and this week on The Novelizers, from Inside Out and The Daily Show, Lewis Black, comedian Langston Kerman, plus from Conan, Rob Kuttner. This season's coming in hot. Welcome to The Novelizers. We've got a fantastic show, don't we, Stephen Levinson?
We absolutely do. Fantastic show, fantastic season. What did you do with your time off between seasons, Dave?
Just got super ripped, mostly.
Nice.
Yeah. Constantly cool. Working out. How about you?
I just sat in this closet waiting for you.
Oh, good.
Here you are.
Glad we're back.
Yeah. And wow, are we back. What a fantastic season. And we're novelizing our very first superhero movie.
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of any alternate universes like the DC universe or the Marvel universe?
You know, this is a dangerous thing I'm about to say. Not really.
me too.
I was always more of a fan of, in terms of comic books, more of the underground comics with an X.
Uh-huh.
Things like that.
That's very respectable.
They were more appealing to me. I don't know. I think it was just more interesting to me. But I don't know. I'm just one guy.
Yeah.
I can still get on board with a retelling of a major motion picture.
And if you don't like the DC universe, we're skewering it.
Yeah, You've just hit a street called easy.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we are novelizing the entire Batman movie, The Dark Knight, this season on The Novelizers. And for those DC Universe fans who've never heard The Novelizers before, and me, because I forgot during the break, what is The Novelizers?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. You're asking me, right, Stephen?
Sure. Anyone on this chat can answer. You, me?
Well, The Novelizers is, you know, you take classic films and retell them, but funny, from, you know, some of the greatest comedy writers on earth, myself included.
That is true.
If I'm, you know, can throw myself, I'm not calling myself one of the greatest. I'm just saying you let me write.
No, you are one of the greatest, or you wouldn't be here.
True, that's true.
You wouldn't be on The Novelizers.
This is actually accurate.
What a fantastic first episode of our series. Can you tell us, Dave, who is on the show and a little bit about them?
For starters, Lewis Black, he played Anger in Inside Out and Inside Out 2. He had a regular spot on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and he's won multiple Grammys for Best Comedy Album. But you probably knew who I meant when I said Lewis Black. I'm just saying that in case you've been living under a rock. And we have Langston Kerman. He's an actor, writer, and comedian known for Bust Down on Peacock. And Rob Kuttner, who's a TV writer and author known for The Daily Show, Conan, and he's one of the producers of The Novelizers.
He is. We couldn't do
which is this show.
This show. Maybe his best credit of all.
Yeah, well, he told me it was his favorite.
Absolutely. Before we get into the meat of this episode, if people want this show to continue, what can they do?
Oh, well, the best way is to support us, meaning The Novelizers, on Patreon, which is not, you know, this is not going, you know, it all goes to, you know, the cotton candy machine, the dunking machine. Just the basic things we absolutely need to make this show happen.
Those machines don't fill themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
We'll be right back after this. We're back. I told you we'd be back, and we are.
I didn't believe you, but here we are. We're back.
It's amazing.
So what happens in today's episode, for those of us who are laughing so hard we can't follow the plot, what's going on?
Oh, man. Well, for starters, the Joker and his cronies disguised as clowns successfully rob the bank where the mafia stores its money. The Joker kills one robber after another, which, you know, isn't as negative as it sounds.
He might as well be the Batman. He's killing so many robbers.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, what do we need the Batman for?
Lewis Black, novelize us.
The Novelizers presents The Dark Knight, Chapter 1, Calrophobia, novelized by Rob Kuttner, narrated by Lewis Black. The city of Gotham is known for many things. Its improbably concentrated collection of costumed supervillains, its whimsically named locales like Crime Alley and Gotham General, it's being definitely not New York City with some hastily replaced street signs from the scenic department, and its endless dark corners projecting the inner nightmares of the human soul. But all those pale next to Gotham's most startling and bone-chilling feature. The worst fucking clowns on Earth! For instance, this gaggle of posers out today wearing cheap plastic clown masks. They don't even have the balls, testicular or red-nosed, to wear actual clown makeup. Two of them smash a window high up in an office building, then fire a harpoon across to another building and ride the cable over to it like a zip line. Can you imagine being a young child looking up and seeing figures of mirth and a zip line? And you aren't allowed to enjoy either? Monsters. Oh, but it gets better. Now there's another one on a street corner demonstrating zero street performer talents. And he gets picked up by an SUV containing two other clowns. Catch that? A measly three clowns in a large car. Did these morons all flunk out of Transportation 101 at Clown College? Then both the SUV and rooftop guys start talking about the Joker and his backstory, making them the most disgusting species on Earth. Exposition clowns! By the way, if we're going into exposition land, did someone miss the memo that this tale is supposed to be about Batman? When are we, the fans, going to finally learn what that guy's origin story was? Anywho, to get back to our half-ass clowns, now this way too spacious, very much the opposite of a clown car, disgorges its passengers onto the steps of a bank. Seriously? It reminds me of that old joke. Three clowns walk into a bank and there's no fucking punchline because this is the least comedic thing ever. Come on, guys. Gotham has 30 million citizens and you couldn't find one birthday party? Their ringleader, and I use that term loosely because these amateurs should not be permitted within 500 yards of a circus ring, is a guy with a blue and yellow tuft of hair that looks like wheatgrass. Let's call him Wheatgrassio, since he and his ilk are about as joy-producing as a smoothie bar supplement. He's followed by his two comrades, a chiseler with prominent blue eyebrows, whom I'll call Browie, and another with blue plus signs painted under his eyes, because nothing sparks delight for a young child like arithmetic. So, now they're in the bank and shooting off, I shit you not, submachine guns? Whatever happened to Seltzer? Finally, we get to meet one guy, not in clown face, presumably some sort of manager, which, in my experience in the corporate world, is an entirely different kind of clown. Then, one of the pseudo-clown crew grabs the bank security guard by the scruff of his neck, easily, like a mama dog. And yet, even with that impressive strength, he does not pick up two more and begin a whimsical bank security guard juggling act. Wither! Fun! Now, they're repeatedly yelling at everyone in the bank to put their hands up, but never, not once, tossing those open, raised hands a single hearty favor. Suddenly, Wheatgrassio grabs a bank teller and says, "Let's go, pal. I'm making a withdrawal here." Instead of properly filling out one of those little withdrawal slips. So, let me get this straight. He's fine with automatic weaponry, but deathly afraid of a paper cut? Then he picks up a blonde lady teller and says to her, "All right, Tootsie, you're taking a dive with me." Ah, Tootsie. Now there was a guy in makeup who actually made me laugh, as well as experience some other feelings I'm not sure what to do with. Oh, sorry to digress again, but now it's been what feels like hours and still zero Batman. And I'm like, if I wanted that, I'd just watch all 5 seasons of the show Gotham. Sorry, back to our deeply compelling clown-tagonists. Remember the zipline duo? Now they're on the roof. One has redder eyelids than a stoner with conjunctivitis, and the other has so much blue smeared below his eyes, I'm calling him Mascaro. Red lids turns off the bank alarm, and then Mascaro shoots him in the head. Absolutely no sign of the gun producing a flag with the word bang on it. What are we even doing here, people? Meanwhile, down inside the bank, that manager guy pulls out a shotgun, fires through his office glass, and takes one clown down like a perfectly targeted cream pie. Not that these cretins would know what that is. Up above, Mascaro has made it to the bank vault door and starts to drill into it, but is suddenly hit with a jolt of electricity. These lame brains are so bad at clowning, they can't even get a joy buzzer right. Soon enough, Wheatgrassio and Browse McGee are having a shootout with Manager Guy, who's informing them that they're stealing from the mob's bank and that he and his friends are dead. Wait, so now are they clowns or ghosts? Pick a lane, folks! And speaking of lanes, Christ, could we at least have a quick foreshadowing cut of the Batmobile? Or are we going to have to wait another 15 minutes in an entirely new subplot for that? Throw us a Batbone here. At this point, I'd settle for a clip of that Batwheels Kids cartoon. At least with that, you have a chance at catching a driver's seat glimpse of the Dark Knight's ass. But oh yeah, the bank job. Mascaro eventually gets the vault door open and goes inside, finding lots of money just stacked up neatly in giant piles. Finally, something vaguely resembling a cartoon. He pockets tons of cash, which is pretty much the opposite of any clown I've ever known. And then, get this, he complains that with the size of this hall, the Joker should have sent them a bigger car. This clown pretender is demanding an even less small car. Does the blasphemy ever end? This whole thing pisses me off so bad I have no choice but to express myself in song. Commedia dell'arte, Bozo Pennywise, even Ronald McDonald is more clown than these guys. Please send in the clowns, some actual clowns. Ah, screw it, I tried. And that's when a school bus smashes its yellow posterior right into the bank, and the driver, another clown, says, and I quote, "School's out." You see there, folks? Leave the expert quips to these comedy professionals. So, everyone's about to skedaddle when a bullet-ridden manager guy says disparagingly, "Look at you. What do you believe in?" At which point, Browser pulls off his clown mask, revealing that he's the Joker, and says, "I believe whatever doesn't kill you simply makes you stranger." See what he did there? He made a pun. Kind of. Maybe they should rename this terrifying supervillain the Dad Joker. I mean, look it. Is this what happens when we take what's already easily the darkest character in comics and go even darker? In this joy-free zone, not even a clown can crack a joke that wouldn't have gotten rejected from a Bazooka Joe comic? I'm not saying we have to go back to 1960s Batman winning a hula hoop contest, but can we have some fucking tonal variety here? Fortunately, this will probably be the last time a big-budget Batman story makes us all want to reach for the Bat Xanax. Okay, let's wrap this up. The Joker sticks something into manager guy's mouth, as if this had to be specified by now, not birthday cake. Then he ties the string attached to it to the bus, and then the bus drives off, pulling the string out, releasing some kind of gas into the bank. And the bus makes its escape by joining a caravan of regular school buses, but its rear is still emitting blasts of gas. So credit where credit is due. These sorry-ass excuses for clowns may not have made a single person laugh, but in the end, they did manage to pull off one massive, ingenious fart joke. Now give me my motherfucking Batman!
That was amazing. Thank you, Lewis Black.
Oh, man.
So good. Of course, every week on The Novelizers, we interview someone who actually worked on the film The Dark Knight, and this week is no exception. Let's hear that interview.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the interview portion of The Novelizers. I am here with Charles Danderberry, who is the vocal coach, or was the vocal coach, for Christian Bale in the movie Batman Dark Knight. Charles, how's it going?
I'm doing well.
Is that your voice?
Yes.
Okay.
It has been this the entire time. That is what makes me so good at the job.
Okay. Well, we got to get into that. So what exactly, I guess it's obvious, I guess because of the voice, but what did you do on the set? Like, what was your purpose again?
Vocal coach for Christian Bale, specifically when he is doing the Dark Knight voice.
Okay. So what?
Your Take voice your is time.
Amazing, by the way. Yeah, no, your voice is amazing.
The way you're struggling with this really frustrates me. I
was not prepared for the voice to be that authentic. I was not prepared. I apologize. My first question.
If Chadwick Boseman needed to learn an African accent from a person, why wouldn't Christian Bale also need to learn to talk all gravelly and shit just like me?
You're right. You're right. I think what's getting me is you got the pauses down and everything. It's just everything is to the T.
That they're down. This is a way of speaking. You speak the way you speak. I speak the way I speak. And then I taught Christian Bale to do the same.
Okay. Why you? Why did they choose you? Because I feel like there's a million people with different voices and stuff. Why did they choose you to do this?
Casting couch. I was on a casting couch many years ago. I was forced to do nasty, salacious things for not a lot of pay. But in that work, I was found. I was discovered by a talent agent who said, "That whore has potential. I could do something with that whore with the gravelly voice," is what my agent said. And the rest is history.
Okay. I mean, I've seen plenty of casting couches, and I must say, not only have I never seen a man, I've just never seen you on there. So this is interesting.
2025 casting couches come in every form.
Yes, you're 100% right. So when they offered you this job, were you kind of aware of the Batman mantra of the whole deep voice thing? Were you kind of aware of that was a thing?
I said to them, I said, Batman for years has had the same voice on screen and off screen. It's not gravelly enough. People are going to recognize Bruce Wayne on the street and say, hey, you called me a bitch last night and punched me in the neck. You're Batman. You're the one that did that to me. And I said, no, nay. If we want this Batman to be the greatest Batman, he'll need a separate voice from his regular speaking voice, which is smooth and sultry and American, even though Christian Bale is Australian or some shit.
Is he Australian? Oh my gosh. Yeah, so he's an Australian, but an American? Okay.
He's British or
British. Australian. Oh, he's one of them.
I'll be honest, I don't know other accents very well. I just know this gravelly, deep
not,
voice.
Not shit. A problem. Not a problem. When you decided, when you went to them with this thing saying, you know what I'm saying, it needs to be a deeper voice. As somebody watching the movie, I kind of see where you were coming from, right? Like, you know, when someone's wearing a bat mask and their mouth is still showing, I still know who it is. I don't, the mask isn't going to stop me from knowing who it is, but that voice will change things.
It's a pretty troubling decision they made to say, hey, we'll show most of the most famous wealthy man in the city's face while he's fighting crime and say we don't recognize him at all.
Yeah, never understood that.
If Tom Cruise put on a mask, I think I'd recognize Tom Cruise's chin.
Easily.
It'd be pretty clear that, that's Tom Cruise. He's the one punching my mother in the neck. That's exactly. Tom Cruise.
Exactly. So let's get to your voice. Did something happen in your life for you to get this, or is you born with this voice? Because it's giving me very strong Lou Rawls vibes, and I was just trying to figure out where you got that from.
I like that you referenced Lou Rawls as you asked about my greatest trauma. Yes, something happened to me when I was a child. My older sister, we were playing in the yard, as children do. Play, laugh. We all were having fun. And then I bent down to pick up a ball, and my sister ran my neck over with a big wheel.
And how old was you at this time?
I was 7.
So in a matter of seconds, you went from 7 to 45.
That's absolutely correct. My mother sent us outside expecting we'd play for a few hours, and then I returned a motherfucking man.
All right. Growing up with this voice, starting at 7, growing up with this voice, was there any complications in life, like just navigating through life with the voice of a grown man at such a young age?
Certainly. Calling my friend's house phones and saying, hello, is Randy home? Always turned negative.
I can only imagine when you had your first girlfriend. Let's say you was about 13, 14. You had your first girlfriend.
Oh, and you had to call
the dad.
I wish 13 or 14. I didn't get pussy until well into my late 20s.
Okay. That's the, and I can only assume why, you know, since so yes.
It's a hard line to draw. It's a hard start for a young lady to be introduced to me. Say you see me across the room at the club and you go, oh, that's a handsome young man. I'm interested in him. I am curious about what he's got going on. I'll mosey over there. You take a drink of Nouveau. This is 2009 and Nouveau is very definitely popular. You definitely take your drink of Nouveau and you saunter my way, and then you say hello, and then I go hi. It almost immediately ends the relationship.
Immediately. She dries right up. I'm pretty sure.
Not interested.
Yeah. So when you got the job, was there any, like, as you're training and teaching Christian Bale, was there any complications with that? Did he catch on easily, or did it take him a while to get to where you was trying to get him to?
It took quite a while. He kept saying, I'm a legitimate actor. Why would I do this absurd cartoonish voice? To which I replied, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Listen, man, don't blow this up for me. This is a big shot for me. There are no other jobs out there for dudes with voices like me. If you blow this for me, I swear to God, I'll kill you, Christian Bale. And then he understood and he worked a little harder to get the voice right.
Okay. How does it feel like knowing that your voice was kind of one of the most famous, I would say, like superhero voices ever, because Dark Knight is one of the best movies ever, and you have a real big part in that. How did that feel?
I think people aren't giving me enough credit for what I did. I think the voice is often made fun of on the internet. They say, ha ha ha, Christian Bale voice, absurd. But dare I say, it's the greatest choice any actor has ever made for a film. He went from being some sort of weird, foreign white into the greatest detective of all time simply because of this voice.
Yeah. So why is it that, because your voice, the voice you have, I must say, just sounds like a very, very strong Christian black man. Mm-hmm. And what?
Interesting. Interesting. I've been a white man this whole time. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm just
trying interesting. To see you might say that.
It's just, you know, hearing him with that voice, it kind of, you know, saying like brought out a lot where it was like, if you didn't see the movie, oh, this is a black guy talking, right? Batman's a black guy. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear any like kind of like within the black community? Did you hear anything like, why does he have this voice? Is he culture appropriating? You know, saying, did you have anything like that?
No, that never came up. Christian obviously is a white man and he is adapting my voice for the for his purposes. So there was never a concern that he would somehow sound like a pastor at a middling church.
Okay, cool. No problem at all. So my question to you is, since your voice is so, I would say known, right? You think of Morgan Freeman, you think of the clear eyes, dry guy, you know, these are the voices that can carry.
Iconic.
And iconic voices, right? And I put you up there. I respect you. I put you up there. Has there been any other work or any voiceovers that you may have been able to use your voice for or anything like that since Dark Knight?
Unfortunately, no. I seem to have been put into a nasty little category that keeps me from working. Mm-hmm. I tried to be the Popeyes lady. Love that chicken at Popeyes. They said no. I tried to be Flo from Progressive. Mm-hmm. They said no. Mm-hmm. I remain just a man behind the mask, much like the man I served.
But I mean, you gotta admit though, it's still like you're like a cult classic person, right? Like the guy that does Kratos, you know, said from God of War, sure. T.C. Carson, and the other guy, yeah. Right? Like after a while, you know their faces, you know who they are. Do you get stopped like walking around or anything like that? Like anybody say, you know what, your voice sounds like Christian Bale? You know, has anybody stopped you or anything?
Yes, a lot of people stop me, and the things they say are terribly unkind. They say your voice sucks. They say you made Christian Bale sound like an idiot. They say your voice is the worst part of The Dark Knight. And I say, ha ha ha, you can't catch me. I drive Uber.
Okay, so I see the voice. I mean, I hear the voice and everything like that. Did you like lose emotion as well? Like, cause when you talk and you say, ha ha, like, I don't see joy. I don't see happiness. I just hear like deadpan and then see that. Is there still emotion there with you since you've had this voice in Seven?
I told you my neck was run over and I didn't have sex until my late 20s. What joy are you expecting of my life?
Yeah. Yeah. As I hear it back, I apologize. I kind of walked you into that one. I apologize for that.
That is on you. 100%.
Yeah, that's on me. I got to be a better interviewer when it comes to those things.
Hey, I'm just happy we got you there.
Yeah. You know, so I'm growing. It's 2025, right? I can't judge. You know what I'm saying? Can't assume. So for those who want to have a career or anything like that, or business in voiceover, or somebody that, like, let's say the guy, the little kid who is 14, he can't get the girl. He can't, mm-hmm. he doesn't have friends. He got the pipsqueak voice. Any advice you can give him outside of getting ran over by your little sister? Is there any advice you can give him?
Oh, you're like, saying don't offer that as advice.
I feel like offering that is like a recipe for disaster. Because when
that was going to be my first piece of advice. You're saying don't use my first piece of advice, which is have your neck run over by your older sister at 7 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. I guess if I am speaking to 14-year-olds mm-hmm. and they no longer have the option to be run over by their sister in a big wheel at the age of 7, then I would say my next piece of advice is stay out of my business. There is no other job available. I'm the only one that should be working, and you need to figure something else out for you. Car wash, Burger King, wherever you need to take this voice, that's none of my business. But there are very few jobs out there. Hollywood is in a dark, dark place, and I'm not losing out to some 14-year-old hotshot who thinks he can be better than me, even though his throat wasn't run over by his sister when he was 7.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as an interviewer, I'm also seeing that this is a question I shouldn't have asked, you know, and I apologize. Like, I'm still learning, you know, I apologize. I didn't mean to rile you up. You
Again,
know, or anything like that.
I told you that I have been sexless and very poor for some time. Please stop offering ways for other people to steal my money and pussy.
I apologize. Before we get out of here, I'll ask for a favor from you.
Absolutely.
You have one of the most powerful voices we've ever had on this show, right? It would do me a great, like, it would be a great service, and it would do me be very good for me if you were able to, like, send us off, you know, for the end of the interview, in your best Christian Bale, you know, and he's doing it for the novelizers, just saying something along the lines of, hey, novelizers, we had a great interview. Everybody have a good day. I'm signing off. Anything you want to say to sign us off with your voice, it'll be great for the podcast.
Excellent. Hold. Okay, I'm ready. Precious novelizers, hear me and hear me good. This interview is complete. You have been invested with the coolest goddamn voice on the planet, and you're lucky to have heard it. We love you. We love you. You are precious little babies. Come back to us anytime, novelizers. Okay, smooches. Love you. Bye.
Thank you for that incredible interview. That's our show for today. Special thanks to this week's guests, Lewis Black, Langston Kerman, and Rob Kuttner.
See you next time.
The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, with Stephen Levinson, and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Ratner, and distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers, LLC.